Well, we all know now, thanks to WikiLeaks, that governments lie and do all they can to hide their lies. 40 years ago, our country was taught a lesson about this official duplicity by Daniel Ellsberg. Here are our movie moles, Denise Morris and Fran Michel, to tell us about a recent documentary about Ellsberg. Fran.
Good morning. This is Fran Michel, here with Denise Morris, to discuss the most dangerous man in America, Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers. This documentary, released last year to theaters and this year on DVD, also played on PBS this October and is available streaming on Netflix, and you can put a hold on one of the several copies available through the Multnomah County Library. The film, directed by Judith Ehrlich and Rick Goldsmith, explains what the Pentagon Papers were, traces how Ellsberg came to release them, and considers some of the consequences. The story resonates with the current WikiLeaks story, as Ellsberg has noted in his statements of support for Julian Assange and Bradley Manning or whoever the whistleblower was. The Pentagon Papers were a Rand Corporation study of the history of the U.S. involvement in Vietnam, which Ellsberg had access to because he was a political insider.
Yeah, and this is kind of the difference between what we're looking at in the past and what's currently happening with WikiLeaks, but it also really is what forms the drama of the documentary, if we can use that. But there is always a drama
and a story.
So, and it really is Ellsberg's transformation that is the interest here. And I think, well, it's the main interest because he was not someone who, like Assange now, who sort of comes at this from a political perspective. Ellsberg was really described himself as a true believer. And he was, anti-communist, wrapped up in the issues of the Cold War and decision-making about how and when to use nuclear weapons and strategizing and all of this stuff. I mean, he was considered this brilliant war thinker. And so it was quite a transformation for him to start there and then to come to the point where he actually releases these papers and changes really what has been considered to be the course of history around that war and around the future post-Nixon.
And he talks a lot in the film about, and other people mention, that a lot of the secrets that were in the Pentagon Papers in this Rand Corporation study were things that insiders knew already. Ellsberg knew from his first day on the job at the CIA or in the Pentagon that the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which was the excuse for Johnson to get authority from Congress to engage in any necessary military action, was based on, well, there was this weird blip on the radar and they thought they were being attacked, but they weren't. And even then, even with that, I mean, they were the reason that they thought they were being attacked was the U.S. had been engaged in covert provocations of the North Vietnamese to get them to attack. So, and Ellsberg knew that this story, which was being presented as there was this attack, was not really clear. You know, it wasn't sure. They weren't sure for a long time what happened, or they weren't all sure what happened. And yet he didn't tell. I mean, he talks about the fact that thousands and thousands of people kept all kinds of secrets because they believed it was in the national interest. And so he talks about his journey from knowing these secrets and thinking that, well, in the interests of defending us against the Soviet Union's power and against the threat of communism and against the threat of a nuclear attack, we need to keep these secrets for the larger purpose of promoting democracy and the American way and truth, justice, et cetera, et cetera. And so it was really a big shift for him to, as he read this report on the history of U.S. involvement in Vietnam, to come to the conclusion that this was not just, well, it's kind of a problem for us, or, well, it's kind of a stalemate for us, and we're not going to be able to win, to realizing that this was really a crime, and that people were being butchered and murdered, and it was wrong, and that he had a moral responsibility not just to stand by, but to actually take action that was available to him because he had, for instance, this report that he could release.
Right. And what the film does so well is, as any good film does, they find these entry points. Like, as you say, the Gulf of Tonkin incident happens on his first day. And we believe it's the Pentagon, but was it maybe the Rand Corporation?
I think it was
which they moved to the West Coast so that nobody in Washington could tinker with it.
Because they didn't want Johnson to know about the report initially because they wanted to keep it secret from him in case he would decide not to get involved further involved in Vietnam.
Yes, who kept repeating, "We seek no wider war." But Ellsberg talks a lot about, you know, we see his progression, and he's a wonderful storyteller. He seems to have this incredible memory for the detail. And for someone who's lived, I think, with a lot of grief about his participation in the early years of that war, I would imagine things are pretty well burned into his memory. But he talks about thinking that, you know, being allied with the U.S. was good for people, that he was really idealistic. And he decides to return to Vietnam and to work on the ground with the troops, thinking that, well, the war wasn't going very well, and I wanted to see it go better. So he really moves from, we hear him tell his story and reveal the points at which he really begins to move and shift. He ends up coming back from that period of time thinking, we can't win this war, but still hasn't quite made this, I mean, he still has a long way to go. And it's the interventions then, as we see, this is not just an individual journey, but there are actually important interventions in his life that move him to understand that he is a part of a larger struggle.
Yeah. And we see sort of the personal, the psychological, the social context for all of this. One of the figures in the film is Patricia Marks Ellsberg, who was a journalist and who became his second wife. And like on their first date, he said, let's go see the cherry. You know, he had a day off from the Pentagon. He said, let's go see the cherry blossom. She says, no, I'm going to go cover the anti-war rally. And he's like, I've been working on this war 70 hours a week, and you want me to go to the anti-war rally? So they went to the anti-war rally.
Right.
And he worried a little about his coworkers seeing him, catching him there. But, I mean, clearly her influence, the influence of the fact that there was this anti-war movement, that there were rallies and demonstrations and action against the continuation of the war. He talks very much about the sort of decisive influence of hearing one of the draft resistors, Randy Keeler, talking about going to jail because he was resisting the draft, and that was the right thing to do. And Ellsberg talks about realizing at a certain moment, the best thing that the best young men of this country can do right now is go to prison. Like, that's the moral choice. Mm-hmm. And coming to the decision that the right thing for him to do as well was to be willing to go to prison for releasing this report because it would end the war.
Right. The fact that he doesn't go to jail, I won't give it away as if many people will already know, but maybe not. But we will see how this plays out in the current situation with Bradley Manning, who is someone who's being held for the last 7 months on charges of leaking, but he hasn't actually been charged. There's actually no proof except for some email chats, etc. Ellsberg really did release the paper. I mean, he out front and up front released the papers, was there and wasn't hiding during the process of those parts of the paper, Pentagon papers being printed and papers being shut down and then other papers getting their hands on him. And there was this real process that he had to go through, and he walked into it knowing full well that he could go to prison for life. And at some point, his charge was up to 115 years in prison, I mean, which is
longer than life, but
longer than life, yes. But he describes his moment as well so beautifully, and he talks about it feeling as if his own life had been split in two, and that it was this life that he's led after he realized that he could go to prison, which also meant betraying some of his colleagues as well, and putting their jobs and their lives at risk. But it is that life that he has lived ever since, and he's continued
and
his efforts.
He was arrested just in the past week, pushing 80, getting his 80th arrest for anti-war activity. He is now working against the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and calling for support and making statements of support for WikiLeaks, for Assange, and for whoever the whistleblower was in this case. I mean, as you say, Ellsberg himself, when he released the Pentagon Papers, did it as an act of civil disobedience, recognizing that he was doing something that was illegal and being willing to go to prison for doing that thinking it was worth it in the way that Thoreau decided it was worth it to go to prison for protesting the U.S.-Mexican War. That there is a long tradition of sort of American dissent within the terms of American rhetoric. And I mean, one of the things about this film is that it really, you know, sort of raises questions about the extent to which that kind of American tradition and the ideals of American democracy can be put into practice in a potentially radical way. I mean, there is sort of partly the notion that, you know, free speech triumphed in the case of the Pentagon Papers. The Supreme Court ruled against prior restraint, saying that the New York Times and the Washington Post could not be prevented from publishing these papers, that the government had not proved that this was really a national security issue. And they couldn't just say it was a national security issue, at least in those days, and get away with that. They had to make the case in some way that was convincing. But Ellsberg also talks about, you know, believing that he would release these papers. He says, I gave up my job, my career, my clearance. I staked my freedom on a gamble. If the American people knew the truth about how they had been lied to, they would choose against it. And about the myths that had led them to endorse this butchery for 25 years, they would choose against it. And the risk you take when you do that is that you'll learn something ultimately about your fellow citizens that you won't like to hear, and that's that they hear it, they learn from it, they understand it, and they proceed to ignore it. And then after the Pentagon Papers were released, of course, Nixon was reelected, which was deeply disappointing to a lot of people, I think.
49 out of 50 states.
Yeah. Big landslide. But ultimately, so, I mean, it doesn't work out as simply and directly as he had hoped, but there is a suggestion in the film that ultimately it did have the effect of, not quite as quickly as he had hoped, but ultimately ending U.S. involvement in Vietnam and ending the war, that finally Nixon's paranoia and his, you know, getting the White House plumbers to break into Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office to discredit him or break into the Watergate, et cetera, that all of these things came out and ended up leading to Nixon's impeachment or near impeachment and resignation and ultimately, shortly thereafter, the end of U.S. involvement in military action in Vietnam. So although, you know, the possibility of change and of individual action taking having some consequences in the way that's hoped is not as direct or not as simple, it's a much more complicated and collective process, but I think the film does try to stress the ways that change is possible and that resistance is not futile.
Right, and it is interesting looking at and the film does such a nice job of detailing the process. Great interviews with folks. I mean, folks who now say, you know, I didn't have the guts to do what Ellsberg did, and I bought into this, that, and the other thing, but that it really ultimately, the course of history could have been shifted an inch here, an inch there. I mean, Nixon hires the plumbers and participates in an act of just egregious, overt corruption, and that is sort of his downfall. And I think the disappointment or the struggle that Ellsberg talks about really well, and the thing that I think need to continue to struggle with now is, you know, how do we engage as a public or as citizenry in response to this kind of stuff, and to what extent can we battle the kind of the years now and years of propaganda and I hate to use the word, but conditioning towards the acceptance of an enemy and a struggle and an imperial right to do what we do around the world.
As Ellsberg had said, using all of the same tactics against Assange and WikiLeaks that they used against him, they would have called him a terrorist if the word had been in current use in those days. We should say there's also a fabulous curriculum for teachers who are interested in using this film. It's on the website done by the Zinn Education Project and the filmmakers. The Most Dangerous Man in the World, Daniel Ellsberg, and the Pentagon Papers, Most Dangerous Man in America. Kissinger's term, he's only concerned about America, is available on DVD at the library and at various other locations. For The Old Mole, this has been Fran Michel and Denise Morris.